Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Zinathi Guma, tackling your stock-related questions this evening. Rikus Reardas from PSG Wealth Remsig and independent analyst Jimmy Muyaha. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks, gentlemen, for your time. I'm going to start with you, Jimmy. What has sunk in for you in terms of how today's trading session has been? Unfortunately, I'm not carrying a sink like Elon Musk to demonstrate what I'm asking.
Good evening, Zinathi, and good evening to our viewers. I think the overall sense from the markets is there's still a bit of caution around what's happening, but the markets are starting to give signs of settling. We're seeing signs of some equity markets looking to or appear to have bottomed out in certain areas. We're seeing that on the currency side of things, yesterday's midterm budget policy statement was quite positively received for the Rand. We've got the Rand below key levels against all major currencies, back below 18 against the dollar, closed out there yesterday, back below 18 against the euro as well, and edging closer to sort of the 20 Rand mark against the pound. So overall, I think the consensus at the moment is while there is still a bit of lingering concern around the inflationary pressures, we're seeing that the markets for the moment are showing a bit of reprieve, and some sectors are showing indications that they might be bottoming out and might be looking for good buy opportunities.
Yeah, we did have US GDP quarter three, the print out today, surprising to the upside with growth of 2.6%. Analysts had expected 2.3%. Just looking at how the Fed will have its meeting next week, and of course that comes days before the midterm elections. Rikus, do you think on your side that they will have to ignore all the political noise around them?
It's difficult for them to do that. So I think there will be some taking into account of that. I mean, a prime example of a central bank doing that is, for example, Canada yesterday, where they increased their rates less than expected. And that, as far as I'm concerned, was a purely political decision rather than driven by anything fundamental. Of course, as far as our own local market is concerned, I agree with Jimmy. There seems to be a sense of things settling down. I'm a little bit more worried about what's happening in America at the moment, because the talk at the moment is all about a Fed pivot, in other words, signaling some kind of accommodation as far as markets are concerned. I'm a little bit worried that it might just turn out to be the third time this year that we've seen a bear market rally, because for any rally to be or to not be a bear market rally, one has to see a number of things. One, which is sector rotation, where people actually start buying into high growth sectors. And we're not seeing that. In other words, the American market rallying at the moment is still in the value sector, and that just means investors are still cautious about things. So although things are looking good heading towards that that meeting, I'm still worried that we're at the moment just recovering from an oversold position rather than turning the corner.
Yeah. Talk about investors hiding in value. We've seen the pressure that the NASDAQ has gone under today and even yesterday with the disappointing tech earnings that we're seeing. Yesterday was Alphabet and Microsoft, and today markets are bothered about Meta. What's your view on what the tech companies have been coming out with, Jimmy?
Well, I think the tech space, much like some of the other sectors, has been under a lot of pressure as of late. And the numbers that have been coming out are ever so important at this stage. If we look at the fact that forecasting for these tech giants is the big thing. Looking at the next financial periods or the next reportable periods for them, if you look at what's happened with Meta, I think to date, since Meta's gone on this metaverse drive and all of that, the share price has wiped out about $680 billion of valuation for shareholders, and that's not a very good thing at this stage. And Meta's not showing signs of letting up on their plans for the metaverse, even though the metaverse at this stage, some of their sectors are unprofitable. But what we're seeing overall from the tech space is there isn't a clear indication, and Rick has mentioned this very clearly just now, is that even though we are seeing a bit of reprieve, there is no clear sign that the bear market is over, the bear trends are over. If you look at the NASDAQ, it's been finding support at the 11,000 points mark, maybe 11,200, but there is still very, very clear downside risk down to possibly 9,000 points as well on the NASDAQ. And I think at this stage for companies, particularly if you look at the U.S.'s financial situation, although the U.S. Fed might look to pivot, we can almost certainly say that even if the U.S. does take a more tapered approach and slows down on the rate hiking cycle, it's going to be a very long time before they go for decreasing rates. So they'll still hold rates at that particular level, even if they stop hiking rates. But what that means for markets as well is that you're still going to see that the U.S. is still dealing with wanting to avoid a recession. If they do go into a recession, it could potentially be the catalyst to a global recession, because the U.S. economy has been the leading economy on this inflationary conversation to date. And so if they start to then have those increased recessionary concerns, which the Fed, to their credit, have said that they've managed the situation all right to the extent that they don't foresee an immediate recession concern, unlike what we're seeing out of the ECB in Europe. But at the same time, given that the markets at this point have not given any clear indication of having bottomed out completely, it's still very much an open game as to whether or not we will hold here for the short to medium term, or whether we'll push even lower.
Yeah, talking about how the markets are still searching for that bottom, and of course now a big thing with that is and with the global slowdown, investors will be assessing the earnings that will be coming out. So quite a fitting question here: given that analysts expect equity returns for the next decade to be single digits, would it make sense to exclusively invest in bonds for the next decade? Rikus?
No, I think historically, and just as a matter of sensibility, equity markets have always been geared towards growth. It might not happen in the next 2 years or next 3 years or next 4 years, but if you lock in a reasonable return right now, just because you are afraid of what's happening right now, the opportunity cost, in other words, the chance that you are going to miss out on growth is just far too big. Nobody ever gets rich by investing in bonds, if you understand what I mean. All they do is avoid short-term risk, and what they give up is the opportunity to actually grow. Unless you think that the whole world is ex-growth, which I don't think it is. So that kind of reasoning, because you think you can foretell 10 years into the future is I'm thinking of a nice word that doesn't include crazy.
Yeah.
You cannot do that. In other words, bind yourself to that kind of outlook. I mean, it's impossible to forecast the future. Who would have said 3 years ago or 4 years ago that we're sitting with COVID and Russia and Ukraine tearing themselves to pieces? I mean, it's absolutely that kind of 10-year outlook.
Talking about
not sensible.
Yeah, talking about the future. There's someone who's wondering about the future of Brian Joffe. Any rumors what the serial entrepreneur is going to do next? Jimmy, do you have any insights on that?
Any intel? No. Brian and I haven't sat down.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't had a conversation.
You haven't got for coffee.
haven't gotten around to having coffee yet. But when I know, I'll be sure to let you.
Yeah. All right. Good. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. There's a question here on Pick and Pay and Nampak. We'll actually start with Pick and Pay. Since Pick and Pay's drop of 10% a week or two ago, that was about a week, it has been on a steady uptrend. Would the panel recommend buying into this rally, Rikus?
Well, I think if I can start top down, in other words, do you want to be in your sort of basic retailers? And I think with the budget outlook and the extension of the grant, there's probably some, I won't call it even relief, but less pressure going forward on the margin of those retailers, whether it be ShopRite or whether it be Pick and Pay or or even to a certain extent, things like clicks and disk games. So certainly it looks better than it did, let's say, a week ago, going ahead for the next 6 to 9 to 12 months. Whether Pick n Pay is the favorite one in that respect, from my side, I would have, a year or 2 years ago, I would have said no. Obviously, with new management and with a slight refocus of the attention, with their Boxer line opening up and things like that, it's certainly not the same kind of company. Although I still think that the competitive environment hasn't changed, where they, as I've always said, they are stuck somewhere between Shoprite and Woolies. They have to protect their bottom line from your lower margin retailer, or your lower LSM Shoprite client, and they've also got to try and attack the Woolies side of things. So they are fighting a battle on two fronts, and that's never a good idea. So I'm still not convinced of Pick n Pay going forward, although, as I've said, it's certainly a company that's changing its spots, and that makes it more interesting to me at the moment.
All right, Jimmy, yes or no? Do you buy into the rally or do you wait for it to dip? It's not a Shoprite at the end of the day, also.
Look, at the end of the day, ShopRite at this stage is trading at quite a high value. ShopRite has been doing exceptionally well. The consumer space, if we're going to have a look at things around recessionary concerns, slowdown in growth, increased inflationary pressures, at the end of the day, consumer retailers like Pick n Pay, like Spar, like Woolies are always going to be necessities. People are still going to always need to buy food regardless of the LSM that they sit in. Whether or not I'd go for Pick n Pay versus someone like a Spar at this stage, I think I'm more impartial towards a Spar. I do like Pick n Pay's value proposition, but I feel like if we have to look at the way Shoprite approached their market with what they've done with the supply chain integration, what they've done with the various store integrations and LSM integrations across their various brands, I think Pick n Pay came to the party a little too late there. So I'm inclined to agree with Rikus to say at this stage, I'd want to see more from them. I'd want to see more of a competitive edge from them before committing to them over another retailer at this stage.
There was a second part to that question for Pick n Pay. Any reason for Nampak's rise of 12%, 16% at one stage rise today? Rikus, do you have any idea?
Not specifically. They had one heck of a drop after the announcement of their results, which wasn't well received. I've just had a quick little look at the graph. I think it's basically recovered just on buying in from that. There's nothing fundamental that I know about it, and I wouldn't trust this increase over the past few days further than a few days ahead.
All right. Well, let's move on to MTN. Does the panel view MTN as a good recovery stock? Jimmy.
Well, MTN, it's very difficult to not be a fan of MTN. They've outperformed their peers consistently throughout this COVID period. They've outperformed in other African regions. You look at MTN Ghana, you look at MTN Nigeria, they've done exceptionally well. So MTN, from a telecoms perspective, always going to be a good stock to look at. I think their growth prospects as well, in terms of expanding and increasing their market share within the African space, that for them has been a big focus, and that for them has served them really, really well, to the extent that you've seen guys like Vodacom almost try to replicate that type of expansion with what they've done in the Egypt market for them. So I think MTN always going to be a good thing. It's just about finding the right price and the right value to see where you'd best be suited to get in.
There is a question on EOH. May I please have the panel's view on EOH results and the looming capital raise, the rights issue? So operationally, it seems that the machine is doing quite well. Of course, now they want to sort out the last bit of their headaches, and that is their debt. Rikus, your thoughts, and do you think that these numbers are good enough for investors to start dipping their toes back into EOH again?
Okay, as a more conservative investor, if it wasn't for the debt, I would say yes. I mean, it's obviously a company operationally on a turnaround. But if you have that amount of debt dragging on you the whole time, any advance is going to be limited by that concern. And in an environment of increasing interest rate and interest rate volatility, the last thing you really want is debt. My stock pick later on will sort of link up to the EOH story. But let me just say then about EOH that let them sort out their debt problems and then we can start looking at it.
And the rights issue, Jimmy?
Yeah, look, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Rick has hit the nail on the head there where he said that anything that you do is going to be capped in terms of potential benefit. And that's to the extent of things like rights issues and things like going out and seeking new capital on other frontiers. You have to be able to maintain and control the debt, particularly in a volatile time like this. Similar to what Rikus has said, my stock pick is very much in line with that around companies that aren't heavily in debt, purely on the basis of the fact that the inflationary environment that we find ourselves in, the situation where we're hoping for a more relaxed environment and the ability to repay debt quicker or more effectively, that's not going to clear up anytime soon. That could be with us well into the next 12 months, possibly even 18 months. We didn't expect it to happen this quickly, and we can't expect it to sort of reverse itself this quickly as well. We've seen that in the past that countries like the US have had to hike their interest rate above where their inflation levels are sitting in order to get the inflation to start moving in the direction that they wanted to do in terms of coming down. And if that's the case, and the US's inflation is sitting at 8 to 10%, and their interest rates are only sitting at 4 to 5%, then they still have a long way to go there as well. So I think the environment that we're dealing with now is a very different environment to what we can expect. We came out of something like the 2008 financial crisis and as a result of that, if we have to look at companies that are sitting with heavy levels of debt and unsustainable levels of debt or even difficult levels to manage, regardless of whether they're on the JSE, whether they're unlisted or whether they're state-owned entities, it's going to be very difficult for companies like that to really start to show a significant enough turnaround or a significant growth. I mean, if you look at EOH, the share price at the moment sitting at, I think, at around 4 rand 30 or something. Pre-pandemic, we were sitting well above 24 rand. So it just shows you that, yes, EOH is trading at a discount at the moment, but it has been sort of consolidating below sort of the 10 rand level since the pandemic started in 2020. So to be consolidating below this level for such a sustained period of time clearly shows that in order for the stock to then turn and start to move in the positive, something needs to be done about that debt.
All right, let's look at the other side of the spectrum. Companies that have benefited from this environment, Shell and oil companies. So, of course, coming out with their third quarter results today, reporting profits of $9.5 billion for the third quarter compared to $4.1 billion in the same quarter last year. Would now still be a good time to get in, or is it too late? I saw those earnings. They're still quite high, but they've come off from the record highs that we did see in the second quarter. Rikus, do you think it's the boat has left if you're not in those stocks already?
Yeah, I was talking about forecasting. Unfortunately, I have to sort of forecast a little bit. And it's to me it's a 50-50, and I tend to lean towards that it's not too late to get into energy stocks, and that's based on two things. First of all, I know Europe at the moment has avoided an energy shortage, but that doesn't mean that they are going to get away from energy prices. They will, you know, it's never been a problem, and I'm talking Europe specifically, in not having enough oil or not having enough natural gas. The problem is the price you're paying for it. The gas reserves they've built up will be depleted. It will have to be refilled come summer in the Northern Hemisphere. And the pricing power at the moment are in the hands of the oil companies and of the oil producers. So in the short term, I still think present weakness might be a very good opportunity to still move into these companies, whether it be Total, whether it be locally like a company like Sasol. But that really depends on this view that I have, and of course I can be wrong.
Yeah, and of course logistics, also one of the sectors that has really benefited from this kind of environment. Santova seems to be one of the most underrated stocks on the JSE, less than 5 PE. This is a screaming buy. Jimmy, is Santova screaming for you?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the logistics space and what that space is going to be driven by at this stage is it's going to be very much focused on supply chains and the ability to actually move what needs to be moved. I mean, a lot of the logistics space relies on the delivery of certain things, certain goods, and whether it's to export terminals, whether it's coming into the country and that sort of thing. And so the logistics space is going to be very demand-driven or supply chain-driven. And if we're seeing the continuation of those disruptions across the globe, whether it's coming from Asia, whether it's coming from Europe, whether it's coming from the West, then I think your logistics companies are going to find themselves in a situation where they're ready and able to work and have the capability and capacity. There's no doubt they could probably meet the capacity, but it's a timing issue, much like something like the copper space at this stage with what's happening in the copper space. It's a timing issue, and that timing issue is what's going to be a bigger driver, because that timing issue affects revenue. It affects your ability to realize revenue regardless of which sector you're in. So I think from a logistics standpoint, there will always be the need for those logistical services and those logistical companies, but it's around the severity of the supply chain disruptions and whether they continue into sort of the new year and into the new year financial conditions.
All right. And talking about copper, can you please give updates about the copper shortage globally to the market and the well-timed new listing of Copper 360, Big Tree Copper? Those are on AltX. So well-timed, Rikus?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it's, I think for most resource counters, I think, we all know the story that there's been severe underinvestment in green and brownfield mining, whether it be in copper, whether it be in oil, wherever. So that is probably not a bad time to list. And even though I think the China growth story has gone, the China internal investment strategy driven by Xi Jinping is not over. So and they're going to need stuff like copper. So
yeah.
So I don't think in the sort of medium term we've got that much of a problem coming out of China. As I said, and it literally is production missing out, you know, or not enough production going on at the moment, or at least sources of copper.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, 30 seconds each for your stock picks. Jimmy, what will it be?
Capital Appreciation, very, very small stock relative to some of its peers at the moment. But what I'm liking about it is the fourth largest stock on the JSE by market cap in terms of the ICT space. Market cap sitting at around 2.1 billion, just under Alviva, which is about 2.2 billion, but Alviva's trading at around 18 Rand. The three stocks higher than its Datatech trading at around 37 Rand. Capital Appreciation sitting at around 1.40 Rand at the moment. What I'm liking there in particular is the fact that they have no debt. They have no debt. They're cash flushed. They're very, very well resourced in terms of assets. Their PE ratio is trading at about 10.3 times, just below the industry average of about 10.5, 10.8. And for me, what that says is if there's opportunity in this market with all these stocks and companies trading at really, really low valuations, it's a really good opportunity for a company like Capital Appreciation to have some really good strategic acquisitions over the coming year. And those acquisitions could prove to be very fruitful. But the fact that the lack of debt within the company sits there means that whatever happens on the interest rate side of things is going to have very little effect on them.
Yeah.
And whatever cash they're holding is going to be earning at a higher interest rate.
All right.
So, safer bet for this week.
All right. Your safe bet for this week, Rikus?
We're talking about EOH, but my stock pick is Altron. Altron is a company that was in the EOH position a number of years ago, where it was a mess. Detton Yati came in. He, even the keel, in other words, he got rid of what wasn't good, kept what was good, specifically people, and steadied the ship. He's left, which I think disappointed the market and me. But with the appointment of Kapp as a new CEO, ex-Diodata, It will be geared to what they have as far as Standard is concerned. They have a manageable debt level, and the potential of Altron going forward and changing its income profile as it gets more asset light as they move into cloud has changed the nature of the company. Pretty good set of results two or 3 days ago. So it is a bit of trust that you have in management going forward, but it's a company that has gone from being stabilized to having the potential of growth, and they don't have the baggage of a heck of an amount of debt like EOH growth.
Yeah, all right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time and your analysis today. Thanks to my guests, Ricus Riordan from PSG Wealth Rimsek and independent analyst Jimmy Muyaha. Do join me again tomorrow for the Friday edition of Stockwatch. The show now airs live at 1 p.m., but do send questions just before that. Have a good evening.